and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, January 11th, 2010. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by TheMediaIsYou.com, a one-day intensive hands-on workshop to help small and independent business owners display their products and services by publishing online content that engages, entertains, and informs. Coming to Atlanta, Chicago, New York, Houston, and San Francisco, visit TheMediaIsYou.com to register for the city near you. As small business owners, we have differing opinions about a lot of things, but the great thing is that we can all learn from each other. And one of the things all of us are learning as we go right now is all about this thing called social media. Some people think it's just hype, a buzzword they hear and gag on daily. Others think that not only is it not a fad and not hype, but that it requires all of us to shift how we attract new and repeat customers to our businesses. For many, the reaction is emotional. On one hand, it's confusing and time-consuming, so some people don't like it. On the other hand, it's exciting and social, so some people gravitate toward it naturally. But before we decide whether we like it or not, it makes some sense to take a look at how it developed and how it's being used by early adopters. This can help all of us create a useful and reliable framework for how we use social media or not. And to help us do that today, I've invited Brad DeGraff to join us. Brad DeGraff has been an innovator in computer animation in the entertainment industry since 1982. Since 2000, he has concentrated on work at the intersection of media, technology, finance, and social change. In addition to his current role as co-founder and CTO of the Intera Project, he is also a senior analyst for John Petty Research, a California-based technically-oriented marketing research and management consulting firm. Called by Wired magazine an icon of 3D animation, and by Animation magazine as one of the people to watch, Brad DeGraff has been a leader in computer animation and the entertainment industry for years, and I'm excited to welcome him. He's the author of the newly released report entitled The Social Web and Its Implications, How Going Social Changes Everything About the Internet. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Brad.
Hi, Donna. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Brad, social media, you know, it's funny, when I was preparing the introduction today, I did think about the many people I talk to who I and other people say the words social media to, and there's an immediate reaction, almost always an emotional positive or negative reaction. Have you noticed that?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think it basically divides down by whether people are using it or not. The people who are, I think there's growing numbers of people on Facebook, which I think is probably the best indicator of which side of that divide you're going to be on. If you're a Facebook user or you're not, I think, that's natural with any new technology. And I think as people, get comfortable with it or see utility in it, they mm-hmm. realize, you know, what it's good for and what it's not.
You've obviously done a great deal of extensive research in this area, but not only that, you've kind of lived it because you've been involved in the technology of the Internet for a couple of decades now. So speaking of Facebook the way you just did, if it kind of boils down to whether people are using it or not, Brad, what about the people who start using it now and they just don't like it, so they just totally bow out of it from a small business perspective? Do you think there are, generally speaking, any long-term consequences to doing that? In other words, can you get so far behind that trying to catch up becomes an almost Herculean task?
Well, I don't know about trying to catch up. I mean, I think it gets easier and easier all the time. I mean, this is a period where things are, you know, just beginning to be done, and inevitably first attempts are going to be clumsy or, you know, unattractive or whatever. I mean, I think Twitter is a perfect example of that. I think Twitter is a revolutionary technology, but you can see why people, you know, react negatively to it, and that's just because it's the first of its kind. So I think that's, you know, fairly typical to have things be daunting. So I think it's not so much that it'll get easier over time to catch up, because all that stuff will get sorted out. But I do think that it is, you know, core competence in any kind of business to really understand your medium. I saw something the other day about some advertisers who were, I think it was Coca-Cola, was saying that, you know, they're advertising on Facebook because that's where the customers are.
Yeah.
Right? They want, you know, they're realizing that, that a large segment of the population that they want to reach are using Facebook.
So they figure it out whether they like it or not, I guess.
Right. So if you're, you know, if you, as a small business owner, if you don't get it or you don't, you know, you're not interested in it, you know, you're essentially writing off a chunk of your, you know, demographic, at least in terms of one way to get to them.
Right. So you've been involved in technology for such a very long time. You know, back in the early 80s and the late 80s when you were, you know, when everything really sort of seemed to have started to steamroll and start going quickly, what sorts of benchmarks have you noticed over the past decade that we can look at to kind of put today into a context, Brad?
Well, I think the, you know, I once saw an analogy that, that, you know, that electricity happened long before electric motors, right? So you had, electricity was invented, I guess, in the late 1800s, and it started to get used as light for lighting and things like that, but it didn't really become a transformational force until somebody invented motors, because motors took that new magic and made it into something that was just incredibly broadly useful. I think that the analogy to computers is where computers are like electricity without motors, and then when the internet came along, that was like the motor to the electricity. It made computers so much more useful in so many different ways that's when productivity really started to go through the roof, was when people started networking their computers. So I think that's in terms of you know, from the 80s going forward, you know, the internet was not really, you know, a mainstream thing until the mid 90s. And, you know, it was used by scientists and researchers and stuff, not, you know, before the web. So I think that, you know, the progression from, you know, standalone computers to networked computers to, you know, to the web where there was more mainstream networking, and now the socialization of that, that's been, I think, the progression that to think about it in terms of.
Yeah. So, because it really is, you know, has been sort of a slow march to this point, and getting faster. You know, every day it seems there's something new that we have to consider. So, you know, let's talk about the charts. There's some really great charts in the study. I mentioned earlier that you recently released, along with John Petty, research, a really great study, which, of course, you can learn more about, listeners, at johnpetty.com, johnpeddie.com. And the name of the search, again, the research is called The Social Web and Its Implications, How Going Social Changes Everything About the Internet. And, Brad, there's some interesting information in here, and one of the things I wanted to ask you about was a chart on page 13 that sort of predicts the split between television and online and social and Facebook media, and how that has sort of progressed and what the projections are. Can you describe that a little bit to listeners and tell us what you think that means for people who are on the Internet, in particular small business owners?
Sure. The chart is really just trying to show, you know, how people use their time when they're using it for media. And, you know, clearly in today's world, you know, television dominates. You know, there's no question about that. And the sort of present graph is, you know, about little less than three quarters television, and then the other time that people, you know, spend on media, about almost a quarter, the other quarter, the remaining you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, 27 or 8% is online.
Right.
And then of online, about 20% of the online, or 5% total, is social.
And one of the things that's interesting is, you know, you have a category for social, but you've separated Facebook out all on its own instead of putting it in a social bucket. Why is that?
It was more just to kind of give some reality to what social is.
Okay.
Because there's, you know, the terms, you know, social media is so broad, you know, how you define it, you know, and Facebook really is, you know, the other reason is because Facebook is such a dominant force in that space.
Well, and according to the chart, social is projected to be 10%, and a full 5% of that is Facebook by itself.
That's
amazing.
Well, you know, the projections are projections. We're not. I mean, we think this is where it's going to go, and a lot of this is just broad assumptions about growth.
Well, certainly, you look at what you cited as what's happening today. You see 3% social, but a full 2% of that is Facebook.
Right. And you know, there's the numbers on Facebook are really dramatic. I mean, it is becoming the sort of counterweight to Google in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is stunning.
Because, you know, I think one thing people don't realize is that all of the activity on Facebook is inaccessible through Google search, which
right.
is an interesting sort of power play between those two because, you know, Facebook wants to you know, own, you know, a large portion of the activity of the web.
Let's talk about what you just said. Did you just say that a large portion of the information on Facebook is not accessible through Google?
Yeah, you can't. If you Google, I mean, if you Google anything that has to do with, you know, a person or whatever, you might get an image from their publicly accessible Facebook page, but that's about all you'll get because everything that's interesting in Facebook requires you to log in. And Google can't access, you know, that information without Facebook's permission, and Facebook, you know, is clearly not going to give them that permission. So in essence, that allows them to, you know, isolate that part of the, you know, a very large chunk of what's going on the web to their own domain.
So it seems pretty amazing then to be able to get so many thousands and thousands of companies to invest a fairly significant amount of resources in a fan page that's only accessible to people who sign in.
Yeah. Well, you know, like that Coke quote I gave earlier, that's where the customers are, so they're, you know, it's very cheap, actually, marketing for them to be able to do that. It's not, I think the issue of whether they can get at it from Google is not really too important in that case. Or at least, it's just an alternative channel. It's an alternative way to get to those customers.
Right. Let's take a look at one of the stories you tell in the study, which I think is very telling. You talk about a campaign called Elf Yourself.
Uh-huh.
What that shows in terms of the ability of companies to engage a huge audience at a fraction of the typical cost. Can you share that with us?
Sure. Everyone's heard the term viral, of course, and, you know, and it's used in a lot of ways, you know, as this, you know, holy grail of advertising because the idea behind viral is you invest in getting a ball rolling and then the customers, the users, make it snowball. They push it along, they make it get bigger by telling their friends and that you as the advertiser don't have to spend more money to get all this extra attention that you get from people forwarding links and telling their friends about things.
Right.
Of course, that's, you know, that's the ideal, but it's not exactly, there are no formulas for making something viral. Something's viral because people respond to it, and, you know, there's no magical way to make people respond mm-hmm. to it. There are techniques and things that mm-hmm. that help you, you know, make that more likely, but there's no guarantees that you can't just say, okay, I want to turn the viral crank and, you know. So, but clearly if you can start a message rolling out in the wild and have it pick up its own momentum and its own, you know, life, that's incredibly cost effective when it comes to reaching potential customers or getting a message to a lot of people. The where you basically pay by the impressions. How many people are going to see that billboard, or how many people are going to see that advertisement on TV?
Right.
It's basically a linear relationship. If you want to reach more people, you spend more money. So the beauty of viral and social is that you've got your customers are helping you push the message out there that you're themselves, and thus reducing your cost. So we liked Elf Yourself as an example because it's a very success story in how that was used. One of the reasons it's a good example is because it was so successful that almost everybody saw an Elf Yourself comic.
Yes, I've elfed myself for 3 years now, and
yeah.
I love it. And then you have another example about a Queensland Best Job in the World promotion that cost about $100,000 but got $70 million approximately word-of-mouth publicity.
Yeah.
Otherwise had to pay for. That's amazing. Those are really good examples to get us started, Brad. We're going to take our first break and come back and talk with small business owners about how we can organize ourselves in social media so that it's not just fun and exciting and interesting, but it also we can maximize its ability to get some returns. I know there's no guarantees, you just said that, but we know there are some things that you have seen and some patterns you've seen that can help us position ourselves to be as successful as possible in this tool. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here talking with Brad DeGraff. He's a senior analyst at John Petty Research, and he's also the author of the newly released study from John Petty called The Social Web and Its Implications, How Going Social Changes Everything About the Internet. And so, John, we were talking earlier kind of in broad terms about what social media was and how other companies are using it to engage their customers. I want to sort of, bear down a little bit more and talk about some practical step-by-step things that small business owners, again, who are wearing all the hats and, already don't have room for one more thing. How can we embrace social media? Because we don't want to miss the boat, but at the same time, it just seems so daunting and overwhelming to get started. And you have some tips for how we can approach this in your study. Can you share some of those, starting with the identity piece?
Sure. The way I like to think about it is that social media is good for both inbound and outbound. The inbound is really just sort of looking at what is happening on social media that relates to you and your business. So what are people talking about when it comes to your specific product or brand, or what are they talking about in terms of the sort of class of product you're selling, so that you can, it's a mm-hmm. way of tracking sentiment and what's happening in that world, so that you can make good judgments about how you position yourself strategically or tactically. The outbound is more coming from you to that world, and getting messages out into it. So, for instance, just, you know, using social media to communicate, you know, things about your product or opportunities or whatever. So it's sort of a, it's a conversation. It's you know, listening and talking. And so I think getting comfortable in that media, you can start on either side of that. I think the inbound is one that's good to get used to. And we have a whole section on how to use the tracking and metrics tools that are out there, which are just they're blossoming all the time. There's so much available data mm-hmm. for tracking what people are talking about and acting on. Mm-hmm. And that's a good way to kind of get familiar with the landscape and understand, you know, a lot of the aspects of it before getting into the more outbound, you know, elements of, you know, trying to communicate into that world. On the identity side, I think basically digital identity is something that a lot of people don't realize they have, but they do. For a lot of people, their digital identity is their email address. But they also have, you know, on every website they've ever registered with, they have an identity there. And, you know, with Amazon, they have an identity that's associated with, you know, what books they've bought or what products they've bought. So whether we like it or not, we all have digital identities that are persistent in this infosphere that actually know a lot about us, a lot more than we actually know about ourselves. You know, Amazon can tell you a lot more about your buying patterns than you probably know yourself.
So for a small business owner, Brad, a lot of us have, you know, we've been on the internet for a while before we even have a business. So you're saying that as consumers, everybody already has some sort of identity. If they've ever done anything online, even if it's not easy to find, there's something there. So for a small business owner who is also now not just a consumer, but also, you know, a very small business owner. And when I say small, I'm not necessarily talking about it the way the Small Business Administration does. You know, those can be pretty big companies. I'm really talking about home-based businesses, solopreneurs, not really talking about direct marketing or network marketing, but just people who have started a business, they own their own brand, and they're growing it. There are some challenges associated. Would you agree with sort of straddling that, you know, being a consumer and being a business owner and setting up a business that identifies you in a way that facilitates engagement
mm-hmm.
without, you know, being able to, and also being able to keep that line separate from personal. Do you understand? Facebook is a really good example of this because when you set up a Facebook profile, if you also set up a fan page under that same profile, well, then you're pretty much muddying the waters on Facebook in a lot of different ways.
Well, it's definitely easy to sort of muddy waters in the sense of just going, having too many options.
What I'm getting at is when a person does that, when they cross over from just being a consumer to also being a small business owner, that identity part is really important, right? You listed it at the top. It's important to identify yourself in a way that may clarify yourself personally because people want to get to know who they're doing business with, right?
Right.
Which also sets you up in a professional way as the owner of this business.
Yeah, I mean, we draw a lot of attention to in terms of how to use some of these tools to, you know, the challenge of, you know, putting a personal face on a business. There's a lot of CEOs of companies that are actually on Twitter, and they use Twitter as, you know, a personal voice, even though they represent the company. So they have to be very careful that, you know, what they say personally is a good, reflects well on the company. On the other hand, you know, companies also use Twitter for customer service, for instance. So, you know, those are completely separate identities for the same company. You have the CEO's Twitter feed and you have the customer service and probably, you know, numerous others if they want them.
Right, and what's interesting about our audience and very small business owners is they may have more than one Twitter account as they grow, if they add a new brand or maybe hire somebody to help them, but a lot of them, for the most part, it's one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so setting up that identity, I guess what I'm trying to get at is in order to use social media effectively, do you have to step back and first sort of assess and decide what you want that identity to be? Otherwise, you could be setting up accounts here, there, and everywhere without any real focus.
Yeah, well, it's always good to, you know, to be really, you know, comfortable with what you're trying. I mean, having clear goals is you know, the obvious, you know, first step. You really need to understand what you want, what you're trying to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
and you know, be clear on that. You know, that so as you say, you know, doing the research and getting familiar with you know, what the options are out there. And I, you know, we actually have a, you know, we sort of listed, you know, a dozen or so, you know, steps and kind of rules to follow and how to use these tools. And as we said, the very first one is have clear goals.
Okay.
You know, another one is just understanding how you want to measure your success. You know,
For a lot of small businesses, the goal, the broad goal is to get more engagement. I guess if once you're engaging people, then, you know, it's, you know, assuming the engagement is positive, it should translate. I know there's no guarantees. It should translate into people at least visiting wherever the site is where they can make a purchase. But you just talked about what returns do you want to get.
Mm-hmm.
What are the options where that's concerned, and how can a small business owner measure that?
Well, there's many, many ways. That's both the blessing and the curse. the obvious way is website traffic, right? If your goal is to get people to go to your website and buy something, then you can measure, what your traffic. I mean, we've been measuring traffic to websites for a decade now, at least. That's the obvious one. We cover actually, you know, pointers to lots of different ways of measuring engagement. How much people comment on something on a website, how much things are forwarded through, you know, through Twitter or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's, and you know, we point to a variety of sets of metrics. There's so many metrics. It is a bit daunting, but I think that's why doing your research and deciding, okay, this one's important to me or this one's relevant to me, you know, mm-hmm. and this one's not.
Right. So you work on getting your identity together, and then one of the things you also talk about is the importance of reputation, and I guess we've had a guest on the show previously, Tara Hunt, who calls it woofy.
Uh-huh.
What are your thoughts on, you know, creating the kind of, you know, social capital is another term for it. You know, are these things that are just, you know, fancy ways of, you know, sort of getting people involved in social media, or do they really matter when it comes to a business's bottom line?
Well, you know, woofy or social capital is really just, you know, respect or reputation. You know, we use it in the real world all the time. I mean, you know, when someone expresses an opinion, you know, we weigh that opinion based on what we think of the source. If I ask somebody for movie recommendations, or somebody, you know, volunteers a movie recommendation to me, you know, I'll pay more attention to it if I think that person, if I already have an established sense of that person's, you know, woofy in the movie recommendation space. Right. If I think that person's a good, you know, has good taste in movies, then I'll listen to them. And if I don't, I won't. The thing about social capital that is, you know, exciting and actually really transformational is that kind of knowledge, that kind of opinion or you know, assignment of respect is now digital. Right. You know, the fact that I follow someone on Twitter is actually a publicly available acknowledgement that I am paying attention to them, that I have, you know, and in essence, I am assigning them social capital in that process. And so, you know, that essentially is a measurable, trackable, you know, real-time, you know, measure of that person's social capital you know, relative to me and to the other people that are, you know, paying attention to them. So the main thing about this whole, all this technology is it makes that social capital into something that's essentially, you know, sort of signals in a nervous system.
And isn't it, I mean, isn't one of the great things that, I'm sort of trying to think this through from the perspective of some people I know are listening who just are totally new to this and completely baffled by it, yet they have a business that, you know, they know that needs to get out there into the social media world but don't know where to start. And one of the things that occurs to me as you're talking is that once you sort of define what you want your identity to be as a business person and how much of your personal self you want to inject into that, then once that brand is defined, you can set it up on two or three different social media spaces, or maybe just one to start with. And if what you're saying is so, then once you connect and engage a few people with influence, ultimately that, if, so long as you're consistent and continue, that is going to continue to multiply, you know, creating the kind of woofy and the capital that you're talking about, just by virtue of the fact that you're engaging with people. It's not salesy or pushy, it's engagement.
Right. I mean, I think that's the key, is that you really, it's not a sales channel, it's more of a channel for laying the groundwork for possible sales. It's really about, you know, establishing a personal or conversational relationship with your customers or with your, you know, your listeners.
And Brett, I think this is where people get stuck, because if it's not a sales channel, but I'm trying to generate sales, obviously,
mm-hmm.
But it's not a sales channel, then I have to, you know, be the business owner that's engaging people, but not be salesy. And
right.
I also have to, I guess the normal way to do it is, you know, why not just be salesy? I'm trying to sell something. Why don't I just come out there and say that? And that's what we've been doing, I guess, before all these different channels were available. You either buy an ad, it says buy this, or, you know, a radio ad, buy this, or, you know, a flyer or whatever, it's buy this and get this and it will help you and this is how much it costs.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that still works in different ways, but what you're saying is that, you know, the mindset has to shift essentially.
Yeah, you can think of it as more of a networking opportunity than a sales opportunity. I mean, if you go to you know, when you go to trade shows,
right.
You know, the sales part is in the exhibition where you
right.
clearly are selling. You know,
right.
But when you go to the ballroom parties,
right.
You know, you're not selling per
right.
se. You're not saying, you know, buy this. You're promoting, which is a different. You're in a different mode.
That's a good way to think about it. The goals can be the same, but the means to them can be different depending on where you are. Today we're talking with Brad DeGraff. He is a senior analyst at John Petty Research, and we're going to come back and talk with him for just a few more minutes about how we can put the social networking tools to good use for us as small business owners. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're talking with Brad DeGraff, senior analyst at John Petty Research. And before we took our break, we were talking about using social media and sort of thinking about the use of it as a small business owner in terms of sales. And Brad, you had a comment about how what a better way to sort of think about it is.
Yeah, because it's such a conversational medium, people will tune out if they feel like they're just being sold to.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like to sort of think of it as part of your marketing and PR budget, not your sales budget. So it's more about, what marketing and PR are about is essentially, tilling the ground for productive sales. It's about, getting your brand out there, making people aware of it, but it's not about closing deals. Social media shouldn't really be thought of as at least today anyway, as a place to sell things, but more to establish a good, a fertile ground for your brand, for your product offerings.
So what it does is it paves the way for relationships that could lead to sales or other collaborative opportunities that could be profitable in some way for your business.
Right. It's sort of like brand enhancement in a lot of ways. It doesn't directly relate to sales, but it makes people think of you when they think of that product and that kind of thing.
When I say the word profitability, as I just did too, Brad, I don't necessarily mean always financially, right? Because with social media and all the relationships we have a chance to develop, there's lots of collaborative opportunities that can have long-term benefits that may not necessarily be financially profitable on the front end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the main thing is that it's about a conversation and getting people raising your presence basically because that's really what we're talking about here is trying to make people aware of who you are and why and to think of you when they're thinking about a particular subject that's relevant to you. I think also it's about giving them a sense of value that you're offering. You can do it in things like contests or whatever, something that people haven't might get something out of.
Right.
I think the most important. I think probably the simplest way to approach it, if it's relevant to your particular business, is in the customer service arena.
Okay.
Because that's one of the things that social media has really revolutionized pretty quickly. If somebody's complaining about a particular product on Twitter, that can travel very fast. And so businesses that care about that are realizing that, and they have people monitoring the Twitter streams for any reference to their product because they don't want that kind of negative conversation happening without them having a chance to respond. So I think that thinking about it from the customer service perspective is a really good way to do it. It's somewhat cheaper than. I think, anyway, I actually haven't analyzed that, but just have somebody watching the Twitter streams for, complaints or whatever and being responsive can really make people really happy with how responsive you are.
Brad, what tips can you offer small business owners to help them figure out where to put most of their resources? Let's just break it down to the top social networking sites that we're dealing with now. We've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, and I guess really preliminarily I want to ask this question. Blogs are obviously a big part of business and life today, and there's so many ways to connect them to Twitter and Facebook that they're integrated almost to the point where, most people who are blogging and trying to do it and get the word out have figured out numerous ways to connect them. So let's look at Facebook, Twitter, and blogging. And do you have some tips and some trends that you're noticing where using a blog and integrating it with Facebook and Twitter can help a business owner, maximize those three things sort of as like a I don't know, a trifecta or something?
Yeah, I mean, I think that those are the most straightforward ways to get started. I mean, a blog is a very simple way of communicating, and you can think of it as your external newsletter. You need to have something to say, obviously, but a blog is essentially the expression that's not limited by number of characters, the way Twitter is, of what you're thinking, what your opinion is on some on industry-related issues, whatever. It's an expression of the deep intellectual underpinning of your business.
Well, let me ask you this then too about blogging and that intersection, because I talk with lots of people, small business owners, who have a lot to say. They do. They're experts in their field. They enjoy what they do. They have quality products. Usually people that sell products have this issue, not services, because most service providers just can blog about their service and not be salesy. But with products, it's a little bit different, Brad. So, I mean, are those people slowly but surely sort of in the online world anyway out of luck if they just don't set something up where they can, you know, have a place, a branded place where people can come to find out what they have to say?
Well, I mean, in the same way that if you don't have a website, you're pretty much, limiting yourself. I'm not saying that a blog is kind of the next step up from a website. I mean, pretty much any business worth their salt has a website nowadays.
Yeah.
Unless they have some reason to, avoid it. But they're crazy not to have a website, because that's how people find people nowadays. A blog is basically a step up from that. That just allows you to be more topical, and actually, it comes from a web log. It's intended to be something that's sort of time based.
And what you just said too is that a website is how these people find what they're looking for. And I guess what I'm wondering is if a blog is updated far more frequently than a website, then if you don't have a blog, then are you compromising the chances that people will find you? Organically speaking, I'm not talking about buying an ad or whatever.
Well, a blog is an easy way to keep a website fresh.
So
I think that's the way to think about it. It should be integrated with your website. So somebody goes there, they see they have a tab for your product, they have a tab for your company history, and then they have a tab for your blog. And that's a place where you can say, new development in the government policy that affects our industry, and here's why, here's what's happening, or new product release, or whatever, just the day-to-day, news that relates to your company.
Yeah.
And that's a place where people, can go when they know to go there. And then what Twitter and Facebook allow you to do is essentially drive people to that. So that if you have a Twitter account, and anybody's paying attention, what a lot of people do is they automatically have their blog update their Twitter account with a notice that there's a new blog post, for instance.
Yeah.
So that if I have a Facebook page, anybody's paying attention to my Facebook page, they might see a notice that says new the headline of whatever my latest blog post is, and a link to that, so that can help. So that Twitter and Facebook become drivers to the blog, and the blog is what is establishing a deeper sense of who the company is than just a plain website.
Right. And so, are there things that do you recommend that companies utilize a blog for that purpose, or does it depend on, as you said, let's just assume every business has something to say. I mean, you at least have a new product to offer today.
Right.
Or some new customer feedback that's favorable about that product.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you've got, the ability to keep it fresh, as long as you're not letting it go for weeks without, something keeping it alive.
Because that makes it look really bad.
Definitely worth doing, yeah.
Yeah, looks like a ghost town. It's not a good thing.
Right.
I guess a lot of people just struggle with the time that they feel that they have to invest in doing that, and I just...
Well, it does take a commitment, but it can be kept, depending on how fast you are at writing.
great things, too, about blogs is that a lot of times, particularly if you sell products that are at all interesting or colorful, is that a lot of times your blog posts can be pictures of your products.
Right.
Especially if you make them, like a lot of our listeners do. A lot of people are manufacturers on a small scale. So the manufacturing process in and of itself seems to me to be really interesting, particularly in this country now where manufacturing on a large scale is decreasing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes an interesting contribution to our society, actually.
Right.
To be blogging about that is a really good thing. So what's on the horizon? We just have a few minutes left, Brad. You did extensive research to put this report together, and I congratulate you on creating something that's not only easy to follow, but contains lots of nuggets of useful information. So for listeners out there who are looking at 2010 and where they're going to put their resources and what they're going to do with social media, you know, where do you see things going? That are, you know, what significant milestones do you predict for this year and into 2011 that we need to be aware of?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know about milestones, but I think where I see things going is really the emphasis on people recommending things to each other. I mean, people, that was one of our big findings out of this whole thing, was that, you know, if a friend of mine that I think has a good knowledge of a particular space recommends something, then I'm going to pay a lot more attention to that than an advertisement about it or to someone who I don't think knows about that space. Mm-hmm. And I think that we, the last decade was about search and, you know, Googling everything, and you think about it now, it's like, how do we ever live without Google, right?
Right.
Well, I think going forward, we're going to be leveraging our social graphs, the people that we're connected to and that we know, or maybe even don't know, but we're connected to them through other people we do that have expertise in certain areas, and then that becomes, that adds a whole other layer of precision to, you know, finding things, learning things, and, you know, making good decisions. So I think that we're going to socialize how we make decisions. By enlisting our friends and our the people that we respect in essentially researching and finding out what we need to know before we make a decision.
That's interesting. So the last decade was about searching for stuff, and this decade carries it a step further by, once you find the stuff, what to do with it and how to find out more about it so you can comparatively decide what you want to enhance your life with or not.
Right. And I think it's going to even revolutionize search. It's going to, you know, the search, what you find through search will be affected by what your social graph, you know, thinks of the search results.
And when you say social graph, Brad, what do you mean exactly?
Social graph is who you're connected to, you know, your Facebook friends, your Twitter followers, the people you're following on Twitter. It's essentially the network as if you drew it out, you know, where everybody
kind of is connected to the social capital in some way, right?
Right. So you can think of, the social graph is, you can think of as being a bunch of dots, which is all the humans, and then edges between them, which is whether they're following them or they're friends with them or whatever, and each of those edges can be thought of as having a variety of qualities. It can be, you know, specific to a given domain. It can have a weight, so that you can say, okay, these people, I'm following this person in finance, but I don't really pay much attention to them, whereas this other person I follow in finance, I pay a lot of attention to. So it's a heavier weight on that edge.
A heavy focus on the future here of small business owners using social media to accomplish specific goals and connect with one another and, of course, continue to grow this economy. Brad DeGraff from John Petty Research, thank you for joining us. Tell us where we go to get more of you and the research and work that you do.
Yeah, johnpetty.com, johnpeddie.com, John Petty Research. That you can get to my report there, and then they have lots of other really interesting industry information as well.
Great. Thank you so much. And I just found John Petty on Twitter. You can follow them on Twitter at John, J-O-N-P-E-D-D-I-E. There you go. That's real easy to remember. So maybe we'll see you there. Brad DeGraff, thank you so much for joining. We appreciate all the insights and tips and all the work that you've done to put together a report that's really useful, and you can get more information about the report and how you can get your hands on it if you're interested in it at johnpetty.com.
Thanks very much, Donna.
Thank you. We'll be back next week for another great edition of Indie Business Radio. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.